It's now time for America's favorite radio program, the David Williams Radio Affliction. Sitting in for David Williams, your host, Peter Clay.
I'm sure that we can handle this situation maturely. Isn't that right, Mr. Poopy Pants?
With sports and other useless information, Richard Harrington.
You have a really good sense of humor.
And you have really great...
Woohoo! And with the news, Matt Kendall.
I'm talking!
Don't bother me. Now here's your host and modulator of the David Williams Radio Affliction. Peter Clay.
Hey, pal, you can't just walk in here without... Holy crap, it's Peter.
Yes. Hello and welcome to the Radio Affliction. I am indeed Peter Clay. Rick Harrington is not here, and neither is Matt Kendall as usual. Rick is on vacation in Door County, and Matt, doesn't matter anyway. No, really, Matt is a nice guy, really. Really like him a lot, and once he comes on this program, you will too, sure. This program really is about you, and you are so welcome to participate in this program by either going to the Radio Affliction blog at radioaffliction.blogspot.com. You may email at radioaffliction@gmail.com. Or you can get in touch with the program with Skype. Yes, you can be a part of the program. Just send me an email if you want to talk about something. We can do a little segment. Sure, what the heck. Send me an email at radioaffliction@gmail.com and set up a time. Tell me what you want to talk about. See if we can put that together. Be a part. Because as you see, as this show evolves, and yes, it does evolve, because you'll realize very soon that there is no intelligent design with this program at all. We do our best, but it will evolve. As more you become part of it, the more the show will evolve, as you hopefully will see. Coming up on today's program, we will look at the news you didn't know you needed to know. Have an interview segment with a young man who's starting up his own blog and is also self-publishing a book and could use your advice on that. I will try to raise the intellectual level of this program a little bit with a very serious subject. I know when I say it like that, it almost sounds like it should be in quotation marks, but it's an interesting situation that I'm running across, and we'll discuss that. And then, finally, we'll end up the program with a little experiment that I want to try. I've always wanted to do this, and that is have a little 5-minute little old-time radio drama, and I'm going to do it in two parts for this show and the next show. And something that I did way back with some friends of mine out in San Francisco when I was out in school and working at a radio station. We did a little thing called Peter and Peck Old Time Radio. We did a little thing on the old... slow down, Clay. The old program, The Shadow. And we did that in two parts. And one was scripted and one was improv. And you kind of tell which is which when you listen to them. So give me a little time. Give me this week and next week. Tell me what you think. And then we'll see if we can do little things like that. Just little segments here and there. So old time radio wrapping up the program today. Now, before we go on anywhere, I suppose we should probably talk about real quick about Hurricane Katrina. And I don't know about you. I'm running into a paradox with this whole situation. I care very much about the human condition, and that's why I like to talk to people and discuss things to not necessarily raise the intellectual level, but to talk about things, and hopefully through discussion, not debate, but discussion, that we can come through with a little bit better understanding about things, knowledge that we talked about last week. Is it truth that we're searching for, or is it knowledge? Because truth, there's so many points of view, it gets skewed. But when we try and seek out knowledge and we learn things, we can definitely sort out falses. And while we all have our own point of view, you are entitled to your point of view as well. We can see if we can work together on things. So I really feel bad for the people in Mississippi, Alabama, and New Orleans. I'm having a difficult time with New Orleans. It doesn't mean that I haven't done anything. I've given to the Red Cross. But I'm getting a little upset with the anger. I don't understand the anger. I know you're screwed. I don't know what else to say. You have, you know, you're washed away and everything like that. But you had warning. You were told to get out. And if you really knew anything Okay? And I don't want to say mean it that way. But if anybody knows anything about this, knows that New Orleans was at risk forever. It was, you know, you're below sea level. Anyway, so I feel bad, but I have this, I'm not sure if the anger is justified, and we'll probably have another 9/11 commission type thing about how did this happen. And it's like, well, we have a city that was founded, based its foundation 12 feet below sea level, and a Category 5 hurricane came through. I don't know. I don't mean to sound insensitive, but I just don't quite get the anger. And, you know, people are upset with the president, but that doesn't take much to do that. He could blow his nose wrong, and someone will be right there. We can get back into the program now. I just want to let that know, hey, if you haven't given to the Red Cross yet, and let's do something else here. I know a lot of people are pleading for help with the Red Cross, but let's... Well, let me put it to you this way. My father used to always have a saying to my mother that you only call me when something bad happens. So let's maybe not just give to the Red Cross this month. You know, maybe let's give a sizable donation this time, and maybe $5-$10 a month, something like that. Because, hey, there's going to be an earthquake in California, earthquakes and volcanoes in the state of Washington. Yellowstone National Park is a super volcano. Tornadoes in Wisconsin happen here all the time. Let's just give a little bit, just like Supertramp used to say, and not just wait for the next, you know, don't just call when something bad happens. Hey, I want to thank some people who made some comments from the last one. Pickle Weasel, Christopher T, and the DWG left comments for last week's program, and I really appreciate that. Keep them coming. And then Gail sent a note who's doing cartwheels over the Radio Affliction podcast. And I really want to thank Gail for that note. And you can catch her comment on the radioaffliction.blog, because then there'll be a link to her site on there, and you can check that out, because it's a really fascinating site. So Gail, maybe we should check in on Gail to see how she's doing with those cartwheels, because you can hurt yourself if you're not careful with that. Okay, the news you didn't know you needed to know. And this first story comes based on what I was talking about last week, on truth. Why is it so hard to find and gain knowledge and all that stuff? Because there's two different types of truths out there that I didn't talk about. One I refuse to talk about, and that's truth in politics, because there is no such thing. And there shouldn't be in some respect. But you have a whole process designed to go with one person saying, I believe this. And the other person programmed to say, I disagree with you. And then that person then says, I believe this. And then that person who said something earlier has to disagree with him. The concept being that then compromise then comes out from that, and then that's where you come, you know, move along. The only problem with that is when you have one person who says this and another person who says this, and they both think they're right, generally they're both wrong. That can happen. I'm not saying it always happens. So anyway, I saw this ad then, which brought up the next thing, which is truth in advertising. In the United Kingdom, Great Britain, England, however you want to describe yourself, England is part of Great Britain, which is part of the United Kingdom. It's the way I understand it. If I'm wrong on that, somebody send me an email and let me know. But anyway, in the UK, they have a little organization called the Committee of Advertising Practice. And they rejected an ad from the Lambrini Drink Company because in the ad it depicted women flirting with a man who was deemed too attractive. Now, I find this hard to believe for a couple of reasons. First, I wasn't there, so where did they find such a guy? And two, how can anybody be too attractive? It's all on the inside, remember? So who's to say on the outside who's attractive and who's not? Anyway, the committee declared that we would advise that the man in the picture should be unattractive, overweight, middle-aged, and balding. Now, I give them credit for one thing, because not only did they say something, they offered an alternative. Now, most people won't say that. They'll just say, don't do this. But they did offer an alternative, for which I'm sure the Lambrini Drink Company you know, held back and said, what were we thinking? You know, you guys are absolutely right. You're so smart. Gosh, what are you doing with that stupid government job? You should have our jobs. Do you think that's what they were thinking? Now, just think, imagine if there was a committee like that here in the States that was telling you can't do that. I'm just saying in that specific situation, the people are too attractive. You know, you can't do it. My goodness. Beer commercials would practically go away. Overstock.com would actually have to say what they sell on their site in their commercials. What about that guy in the Tag body spray commercials? Just think of that. He'd have to be attacked by unattractive, overweight, middle-aged, balding women. Yeah, that would sell, wouldn't it? All right, so what you're saying then, Mr. Clay, so what you're saying is you would trade truth for freedom. Isn't that what you're saying? Because you're caring more about freedom of speech than you are for truth in advertising. I might respond, well, maybe. But look at it this way. Truth, as I've already stated, is subject to many points of view. But then again, so does freedom. So much so that I think actually truth might have better odds of existing than freedom. Well, that's, I'm digressing on that. That's a topic for another discussion. And since no one's telling me what to do tomorrow, freedom lives. So I will go back to what I talked about last week. And that is gain knowledge. Gain knowledge about the products, read the labels, do a Google search, whatever. Find out and then see what the falses are. Do you really need a spray to be attacked by women in a store? I don't think you should. I've never needed to. Now, another thing, experience plays a factor, too. Growing up, this is showing my age here just a little bit, there was a product called Zip Shoes. Do you remember them? Well, anyway, in the Zip Shoes, they suggested that if you wore their shoes, you would zip along, and you would jump all over the place and all these wonderful things. So imagine my surprise then when I tried these shoes on, and just a couple of steps out of my front door, I land right in the middle of a bush. Not very happy about that. I also think it was the last time I had blue shoes. I mean, bright blue shoes. Didn't quite work for me. So I do think, based on that, based on experience, my experience, that advertisers should maybe try to be a little more truthful. I don't really know if they need to be honest. They want to sell a product. I understand that. But a little truth won't hurt. Here's an example. I would like to see just one home pregnancy company, instead of showing these couples all gleeful and happy, and oh, we're going to have a baby. Oh, I'm so happy. All right, great. But that's not what home pregnancy kits are really for. You know, if you really want to get pregnant, you know, you just keep trying until you do, you know. And hey, practice makes perfect, folks. But I think the one company should just have one freaked out chick who just goes nuts when she finds out she's been knocked up. It's like, oh, I'm going to kill that guy. Screaming into the bathroom. I might even buy one just for the heck of it if a company did that. I might even try and knock up a lady for that. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so here's my advice. Just go back to the Committee of Advertising Practice because it seems like they need a little help here. They haven't had much fun lately, all right? Lambrini Company isn't putting out Crunchy Frog here, okay? So to have a Lambrini drink, have some with some attractive people and unattractive people, you know? Don't, you know, separate. And enjoy life. May not be the truth. It may not what we wish were true. But who can really say it's false? That's always going to be my thing. Just relax and have fun. That's usually my philosophy. Here's an interesting story for all those folks who are paying $3 a gallon for gas. And can I say why? Is it really worth it? Is walking so hard? Anyway, if you've got a diesel car, here's something you can try. Here's what Madison Pizza Company is doing. They now have two cars that are running on waste oil from their own fryers. The Glassnickel Pizza Company creates 240 gallons of waste oil each month, which they used to have to pay $50 a month to get rid of. Now they've got two cars that can run 9 hours straight. That's a lot of deliveries, folks. And not bad pizza, too. If you're in Madison, come on town and I'll buy a Glassnickel pizza. Maybe. Come to town, get one anyway, and then we'll see whether I buy one or not. See if I'm even in town. Who knows? Anyway, it only costs $1,500 up front to convert a diesel engine into a waste oil converted engine. I think that's a good idea. I know also that Willie Nelson's doing it with his tour bus. He just goes from restaurant to restaurant, fills it up, and boom, he's off. He's on the road again. Anyway. So for more information, if you want to convert your diesel, like a Jetta, a VW Bug, what, Mercedes? Who else has got diesel engines? You can go to greasecar.com or veggievan.org. And who knows, I might even put links to that in the comments section of this podcast at the radioaffliction.blog. Radioaffliction.blogspot.com. Check the comments there, and I'll have little notes in there as well for you to check out. Okay, we got spectacular program coming up. We got an interview segment coming up with Adam Clay. Yes, he's my brother. Little nepotism never hurt, but he's got his own blog that he's doing, and he's self-publishing a book, and he could very likely could use your help. So we got that coming up. Then we also got Peter and Peck, old-time radio version of The Shadow, and I will try to raise the intellectual of the program. Coming up here on The Radio Affliction. And welcome back to Antique Corner. I am Dr. Peter Clay, joined as usual by Dr. Richard Harrington. And we are going to talk about antiques. And Richard, I've been going over this Persian flower vase. Why don't you give us a little detail about this?
Yes. It's a beautiful piece, by the way, that was brought
up. It is very beautiful, yeah.
It comes from the early 13th century.
Correct, yeah.
It's got the tubular spout, which is one of the definite defining characters of such a piece.
Absolutely. It made it a favorite among people at that time, and particularly in Holland.
Definitely, a lot of it popped up in Holland.
The Danish thing and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, with the Hollanders.
And it's like, Rick, be careful of the vase. Oh, my God! Oh, well, there goes the old
that's
vase.
It was worth about $10,000 with all the pieces on the floor. I'd give it, I'd sell for about $125 in a baggie at this point.
The Windsor chair.
Now, you and I have always had disagreements about the Windsor chair because you like it, and I was never intrigued by the claw feet or the carvings on the sides. They weren't attractive to me.
Well, I find it fascinating. It was purchased by J.P. Morgan, one of the great rich men of our time, and so the craftsmanship of the Windsor chair, I've always rather enjoyed.
And I always thought they were crap. Sitting on them, they didn't feel good. They were crickety. That one that you sat on and broke that day.
Yeah.
I don't put any solitude into that particular piece. Normally made out of ash wood, and sometimes burnt ash wood even. And sometimes splinters in the ass would occur, and it just the lacquer wasn't well, and it would chip off. And then I have a real problem with that, and the craftsmanship was just not good. And that hideous pink color that it came in did nothing for me. I felt intrusive. It didn't feel good. And then to fit the girthy butt of a larger man or woman, you couldn't slide the buttocks into the back part of the chair.
Tune in next time for Antiques Corner with Drs. Richard Harrington and Dr.
And then the
Peter
high
Clay.
Price that it went out at, it was being sold for such large...
This is the David Williams Radio Affliction.
And welcome back to the Radio Affliction. Peter Clay back with you. And we have our first interview segment on the Radio Affliction, for the podcast version of it at this point. And a little bit of nepotism involved, but there's some things going on with my brother Adam Clay's life that are really rather exciting, and I think it's a good thing to share them with you. And also, he may even be able to use some of your help. But before we get into that discussion, I want to talk to him about something else that's going on, because as we are talking right now, New Orleans is being blasted by a hurricane.
It's being rampaged.
Yeah. And I'm wondering on the sensational media how they're going to handle this stuff. Obviously, it's a disaster. But is it a tragedy? Now, the reason why I say that is New Orleans is 8 feet below sea level. So there has always been the threat of this happening. And a couple other things. You live in California, and there's always the threat of an earthquake. And the one that really fascinates me is Seattle. You know, they have this picturesque thing in their background there, but it could blow up any time. It's a volcano. So my point being is that we know these things are going to happen. You know, it's been a threat for a long time that New Orleans could get flooded by a hurricane. We know that California could end up in the sea at any moment with an earthquake. And Seattle could blow up at any moment. So are these things really tragedies? These are... Or are these just risks that we know that we just take because, you know, it's one in a million chance, you know, this is going to happen. So I ask you first, before we get started on this, Adam, because you've gone through a few disasters in your life. You've had the natural disaster, and then you had the, I guess what we would call a tragedy then, with the Oakland Hills fire back in 91 where you lost your house.
Which
and how that affected
you. It's a natural disaster as well.
Well, Mother Nature aided that, though. But that was started by a human, though. I mean, and you also had time to evacuate. It might not have been enough time, though. I mean, you've had time to evacuate for this. But, an earthquake can happen just like that. You know, a tornado, you know, can happen just like that. You know,
absolutely.
It just happened to me a couple of weeks ago here in the area. It blew by me, but it hit a town, you know, just south of here. You know, that could have been me. You know, I mean, these are the risks that we take. So I just want your perspective on it, I guess. Is the media, if they come out and say, oh, the tragedy, you know, for something that's very likely known that it was going to happen all along.
I would imagine a lot of people would scoff at the news reports that say that, you know, this terrible tragedy of this hurricane hitting New Orleans, when it was just kind of like, you know, for somebody who lives in the Midwest, where there are no fault lines and there are no coastlines, a lot of people in a circumstance, in a safe environment, quote-unquote safe environment, think that somebody's crazy for living under these circumstances. Anything can happen at any time.
That's
and at the
point,
risk
yeah.
of sounding negative.
Well, I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, somebody is going through a trying time right now. I'm not trying to demean them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But we are guests on this planet. You know, we are not in control of these things. And when you live in a New Orleans, in a California, there is a risk of doing that. And so I don't want to make it sound like I don't feel sorry for these people, but I also don't think it should be reported as, tremendous, you know, tragedy here. I guess disaster, yes, but I guess it's the language that I'm fearful of them using, I guess, is my
right.
point.
You can scoff at somebody who looks like they're asking for it, like New Orleans was asking for this disaster. Or waiting for this disaster to come.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, at any given moment, a tornado could come down and take away half of Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we get, and then there's the whole issue of global warming, though, too, you know, and stuff. I mean,
when is it going to be, you know, are we going to start looking at Canada for being crazy, for living up there when they could melt away at any moment, you know?
Well, it's you know, I mean... A lot of the weather patterns, you know, come from there. And the permafrost that's melting. I just popped a pee there. Sorry, folks.
Oh.
But, yeah, I just want to get your perspective because you've been through an earthquake. So have I. Then you also lost a house. And, you know, you've talked about how that affected you and all that stuff. I don't need you to go into great detail on that. But so, obviously, you can tell that when you lose something, it is a trying time. How do you feel that the Oakland Hills thing was reported on that. You know my feelings on this, but the sensationalist press that went with the California earthquake, you know, hey, we knew the risks. People died, yes, and it was a shame, but, you know, hey, life had to go on at some point, and you had to keep plugging. We knew this was going to happen, and to be perfectly honest, that could have been a hell of a lot worse, you know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, a little perspective on the Oakland Hills fire, because I didn't go through that. You did. What it's like to lose something like that.
Well, the Oakland Hills fire, the thing that was so fascinating about it is that, you know, talking about waiting for something to happen or being unprepared for something that is to be expected, the roads in the Oakland Hills were too small for fire trucks to even get up to provide assistance.
Yeah.
So there was a circumstance of how, you know, how could this possibly happen to us when you kind of set yourself up for it? The news media at the time, I felt it was adequate.
Okay.
It was not exploitative. It was a it was in the San Francisco Bay Area, so a large broadcasting station was reporting.
Yeah.
So it went nationwide very quickly.
Yeah.
That was not a problem, but they came out with a TV movie called Firestorm.
Yeah.
That
made
was,
for TV. I think that needs to be clarified because there's not very many of them.
That was exploitative.
Yeah.
And that was...
They had to throw a love story in there too, didn't they? Or something.
They threw
like
a love story in there and, you know, father's having trouble with the daughter and, you know, so
did they get a
so
chance
forth.
To say their last goodbyes and all that stuff? Huh?
So it was just, it was a cheesy movie. And what was so exploitative about it is that they filmed all of the footage with the stars, like LeVar Burton and Michael Gross from Family Ties. They filmed those separately, and then they interwove actual
news footage. Yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
From the fire. That was kind of rude.
Yeah. But, especially to people like, when they're doing it. That's why I'm really afraid of... There's already talks about movies for 9/11 and stuff. I know we're going on 4 years and all that stuff. I still think it's too soon. I don't need to see the planes going in there because... What's the best way to make a movie on that is to use the actual footage on that.
Footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because there is actual footage of the planes going in and all that stuff. So
stop and think about this. We're talking about an entertainment industry that to pay respect of 9/11, any movie that was filmed in New York City at the time of the 9/11 occurrence or before the 9/11 occurrence, they meticulously went in and remove the Twin Towers from the background.
Yeah.
And anything that was filmed in New York City. Now, we are... And also, they delayed the release of Collateral Damage with Arnold Schwarzenegger to pay respect to 9/11 and how it might be hitting a little too close to home. Now, everybody's talking about a movie deal.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Who's going to be the first to release it? And you know that Universal is going to release a movie at the exact same time that Paramount is going to be releasing one. You know, it's double standard.
Yeah, and then we're going to have to hear from the families again and where they think the proceeds should go and all that stuff. And I'm not criticizing them, but because they are dealing with a heck of a lot more than we are, but we're all dealing with issues on it still. I mean, because in another couple of weeks, we're going to have to relive it again. And I think we should. I think once a year, it should be a holiday, a remembrance or something like that.
Absolutely.
That was an awful thing that happened, and it really shouldn't happen again.
That is the most devastating occurrence that has happened in the history of the United States, as far as something happening against us. There's the Civil War. And
I was just thinking. I mean, that was pretty devastating because we were torn in two and, lost a lot of, families destroyed and, a civilization. You could say it was an ugly civilization, but anyway. Well,
as far as being attacked from any sort of foreign entity, that's the most devastating attack that has happened to this country in its history.
Yeah.
So I think that should be acknowledged as a holiday by all means.
Now, to get back to what you're really on the program for, but your insights are always welcome. You've started a blog. We'll get to that too. But how would you describe yourself? I mean, you write, so therefore you're a writer, but you're an artist for the most part, would you not say? Introduce yourself to the public. Explain yourself a little bit, if that's possible, in 30 seconds.
I've never enjoyed the term artist
because
there is such a pretentious air about it.
Okay, so there's negative connotations with that word to you.
I'm an artist. Oh, I paint.
Okay.
I paint with oil. I paint with acrylics. I doodle on napkins. I draw in sketchbooks. You know, I am an outlet for... I'm just creative energy buzzing in a human body. And sometimes it comes out in words, and sometimes it comes out in images, and sometimes it comes out in me babbling into a microphone like I'm doing right now.
Right. But since you haven't softened it, and I appreciate that, I mean, so you're definitely creative. I guess I would just, you've already explained why, but I guess this is where we get into these little problems where euphemisms come in, where we try and soften the language when we're not really dealing with what you are. You are an artist, because there's lots of things that you do. I mean, there's artistic qualities, at least in it, you would have to admit.
Here's my take on that.
Okay.
Okay. I feel that the term artist is secondary. As an I myself, as a primary, should not be allowed to call myself an artist. I believe that I do what I do. It comes naturally. And it's up to the viewer or the listener or the reader or what have you to come up with the term artist if it pertains to me. That I leave to the other person. I don't call myself an artist. If that answers your question.
Yeah, I kind of... No, there wasn't really a question on it. I was just... I'm going through this, which is kind of why I wanted to talk to you about this stuff, too, because of what you've been going through, because you've also worked on what started out as a screenplay is now becoming a novel, whether or not it'll be the great American novel or not, but it's come a long ways. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have always wanted to do such a thing, and I think you're there in some ways. So I'm looking at this book that I've been trying, you know, in order to... I've had problems with writing because I feel when I write, that leads to different things. It leads to a radio show, a blog, or a radio drama, or, you know, a video piece with my friends. You know,
wherever it takes you.
Exactly. I've been reading this book by Marshall J. Cook, who's also a native of... Well, he's not native of Wisconsin, but he's... been in Madison for a while and a university professor here at the university. And he's written a book called Freeing Your Creativity, A Writer's Guide. And in his third chapter, he's talking about, you know, starting to write and just write for writing's sake. And so he defines it. If you write, you're a writer. So that's, I guess, what I was just trying to get at with you. If you draw, are you a drawer? Are you a writer? What are you? That's what I was getting at is how you.
I'm a human being, damn it,
with feelings and stuff. So,
emotions.
That would be the thing, though. You write and you write these things. You wrote a screenplay and you've sent that off, and you now put it in a book. What are you getting at? Are you writing to write, or are you writing for yourself? Are you writing for an audience? What are you trying to get at with that?
I'm writing for an audience primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the funny thing is that I don't have that audience yet.
Right.
I'm hoping to find that audience. I believe that the writing I have done will be accepted by an audience.
Okay, now that's the thing. Now, are you seeking acceptance on this, or are you just trying to get a generalization of what kind of writer you are then by audience input?
Now, deep down inside, I think that we're all writing for acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, deep down inside, I believe that we're all doing whatever we do for acceptance. It may not be our primary function in doing so, but somewhere in there, you know, you're always saying, you know, I hope that somebody appreciates this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the writing that I do, it's writing that just comes to me, and it needs to get out. And it's like I have to expel it from me. Like you were talking about, the writing that you do ends up in a blog or ends up in something or other.
Mm-hmm.
You're not fully conscious of what it's going to be while it's coming out.
It's interesting.
That's the way. Yeah, the way that I write.
Because this is a fair question to ask to you on then too, is that I guess sometimes
That's why I read that quote. I mean, I write, so therefore I'm a writer. I write to write.
Right.
And then so there are times where it has come to be where I want to write a short story, and therefore I do, whether it be an assignment or something like that, and then I do. What can happen with that, though, is if you do have a creative mind, is that I wrote something and it was completely intended to be the Great American Novel or something like that, but became something else. It became a radio gig. You know, it became, you know, something else. So that's all I'm saying is that getting, like you say, getting the ideas that you have this idea and it gets out and it takes on a life of its own kind of type of thing. So I guess that's
one
be,
of those.
Go ahead.
It's one of those circumstances where I believe it is completely beyond your control, that you have to expel all of this energy and then look at what you have. And that's the skill of being a writer, is taking the mess that you've made and putting it all into place like a puzzle,
you know,
until it becomes a tangible object, like a book, or like a writing on your blog, or a website, or what have you.
Yeah.
I was writing a story about a drug dealer and how he is getting into trouble in the game. And so he gets out of the game, luckily, with his life, and gets a job in a delicatessen. And then the story goes on from there, and I stopped and I realized, what are you interjecting this delicatessen story into this story about a man and his trials in life? The delicatessen can be a whole nother story. So there's another great American novel that just spawned itself out of a previous great American novel.
Sure.
So, you know, two stories out of one.
Well, there's the one thing that Mr. Cook brought up in his book, too, is what you're also getting control of is if you're the left side of your brain, the right side of your brain. One part is the party animal and just, like, let it all fly out. The other side's trying to gain control and all that. That's where writer's block can kind of come in from, too, because the other side is tired of this other side telling it to settle down a little bit, and the other one's doing that, you know, and that type of thing. So that kind of leads into what you're kind of talking about there a little bit, too, I noticed. So that's interesting. So now, what kind of steps are you taking now? You've got the book pretty much written. What are you trying to do on it? And maybe how could someone who's listening to this program maybe even help you?
Well, right now, I am going to be posting segments of the book on my blog, The Creative Workshop, at blogspot.blogspot.com.
That's great. Creativeworkshop.blogspot.com. I'll put a link on the show notes, too, and it's also on my blog roll on the Radio Affliction blog. Yeah, so we can take care of that for you, too.
I'm going to be starting with the introduction. So basically, what you would see on the blog would be what you would see if you opened the book to its first page.
Okay.
So it might not make any sense, but then at the same time, it's the introduction. It's just to tease you.
Sure.
As well, I've got a publisher in New York City that wants to take a look at the book. However, they're going to be charging me a fee, and I don't know if I want to go that route.
Okay. So in other words, if anyone out there has self-published a book or something like that, you know, whatever, or gotten a, what do they call them, advisory agent or literary agent. There we go.
Literary agent.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good. Now, talk about the blog here a little bit. The Creative Workshop, where did that come from?
The Creative Workshop was it was born back in 1992. I and some others had come together. We were all very creative people. We all painted together. We all worked together. It was a good little community. And I had gotten a videotape together of my artwork, their artwork. We went around San Francisco, we went around Berkeley and Oakland, and for 2.5 years straight, we showed our artwork on a monthly basis. And we did a couple of sales, we made some contacts, we made a lot of friends, but after about 2.5 years of doing that, the Creative Workshop got tired, and basically we sold all of our good work, and we just had the remaining work to look at. We had to stop and say, you know what, we have to produce. We've sold everything that we have. It's time to get back into production mode. And the group disbanded And I myself just decided to call my own creative endeavors the Creative Workshop. I did some logos for people, did business cards, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
The Creative Workshop has been in hiatus for about the past 5 years. I've moved around a lot, and now I've finally found a nice place to rest in Carmel Valley Village, California, the town where the sun always shines. And I've got my studio.
Except for when it doesn't.
And running, and I've actually been painting for the first time in about 3 years.
Wow. So you open up one avenue again with your writing and all that stuff. It seems to be opening up another then a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, like you were talking about the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which it is exactly, but it's the left side of the brain. I'm sitting here working on a piece of writing, and I'm being very meticulous, and I'm being very structured. And then the right side of my brain needs some work, needs some exercise. I go into the studio, and I let it flow a little bit.
Right.
I think I might be getting the sides of the brain mixed up.
No, I think you actually got it.
But
then
regardless.
I'm dyslexic and then, what do you call it, when you can do with both hands, ambidextrous.
Ambidextrous.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm completely out of whack with that stuff. So anyway, okay, so the creativeworkshop.blogspot.com, you've got some writings on there now, and you've got some photos, and you're going to keep updating that, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing info and giving your opinions about the off-topic discussions as well. Adam Clay from the Creative Workshop. And we
a little bit of nepotism is a good thing.
Yes, but yeah, he's my brother. It's good to talk to you anyway. Anyway, we can do it. We'll take a quick break, and I'll have to raise the intellectual level just a little bit here on the Radio Affliction.
And now it's time for Daily Traveler with Rick Harrington. Hi there, everybody. I'm Rick Harrington. Today's travel is going to be from Juneau, Wisconsin to Mayville, Wisconsin. Now, as you'll know, the easiest route, the name of the show here is Traveling with Rick Harrington, and what I do is I give you the easiest route from one point to another point. And again, today, I'm going to take you from Juneau, Wisconsin to, what did I say? To some other place. Mayville, yes. You'll head on Highway 21, catching 80 going north. Once you jump on that, you'll take that for about 7 to 10 miles. Jump on Highway 9094. Take that for about 78 to 80 miles. Jump onto 78 and actually go back south, heading onto 51. Sliding over past Portage, down near Partyville, by Cambria. Look out for Friesland. That'll be right there by you, too. Take a right through Randolph. Stop and get some of those delicious donuts and coffee they have at the corner shop there. Then take an immediate right down to Beaver Dam. From Beaver Dam, you will take Highway 26 down to Lebanon, and then right over through Watertown, and there you are at Mayville, Wisconsin. Thank you very much.
This is the David Williams Radio Affliction.
And we're back on the Radio Affliction. I'm still Peter Clay. That hasn't changed. And it's time to raise the intellectual level here on the program. At least my intellectual level. I won't speak for you. That is completely up to you. To talk about something I wrote on my blog, on the Radio Affliction blog, reason number 23,412 why I don't think I'm ever getting married. It was about a young lady, I'm assuming young lady, a lady, who wrote on her blog, which I put a link on in that post, where she wonders if she should be upset with her husband. Those are my words. Her words were a little stronger than that. For reasons explained in the post. And if you go and take a look at it, it won't take you very long to answer, yeah, duh. So my reason on that is why, this is the reason why I don't want to get married, is that. This sounds like a person who's married to be married. I want to say that she doesn't love her husband, all right? A long time ago, I wrote a post called Love, a Reality Check. And the Cliff Notes version of that is that love is easy. You love your parents, your pets, your children, your sports teams, your coworkers. I love my ex-girlfriends. Still, hey, important part of my life. But when it comes to true companionship, the bond that is lasting, powerful, that makes you see things you haven't seen before and all that stuff, you know, that lightning bolt, you know, what we're talking about, that's not, there's more to love than that. That's the more. And it can usually only be defined as and know it when you feel it. So that whole type of thing. My reason number one why I don't want to get married, or why I don't think I'm going to, I'm not saying I don't want to, it's just why I don't think I'm going to, is that my definition of marriage is seemingly then different to other people's, like in that situation. So in some respect, reason number one and reason number 23,412 are, you know, usually these things are all derivative anyway. So getting back to the Invisible Writer, that was the previous post. That's the name of her blog. She, you know, loves her husband. She's quick to point out because a bunch of people, you know, commented, you know, dump him and all that stuff. And it didn't take very long for her to come back and say, well, you know, I'm only pointing out his faults. You know, that he likes to dig through dumpsters to find a gun that he hid. And, oh, the two DUIs and, you know, stealing her 1953 car and driving it around drunk, you know, all that stuff. You know, little things, you know. He's really a nice guy otherwise, which I'm sure. And I'm sure that he loves her because he, you know, she bails him out every time and, you know, doesn't get upset like she says or, you know, wonders if she should be upset. So it's kind of like this. It's the, here's a classic analogy for you. Did you ever see the movie A Bug's Life? Really cute movie. If you haven't seen it, I said it's done by Pixar, the same people who did Toy Story and The Incredibles and those good movies. The reason I like those movies is they're not dumbed down. You know, they're good enough to be entertaining to children, and it doesn't insult, you know, adults. You know, it provides entertainment all around. Although sometimes the humor gets a little, hopefully you hope the kids don't get it. Anyway, the point I think of A Bug's Life is you have this race, let's just say, the species here, and they believe their whole existence is to serve the grasshoppers. It's what they do. They pick the food, you know, they pick enough for themselves, and they make this big collage here, this big thing, and the grasshoppers come once, twice a year, whatever it is, and grab it. Yeah, and they go on, they feast, and they think life's great. Because they got these little creatures that believe it. So that all comes to a head at one point where a couple of grasshoppers go, hey, man, geez, we got all this food, we're having a great time. Why should we go over, you know, bug the ants again? This is getting boring. You know, you just push them around and you run and you go, hey, I want to party, you know? And it takes the lead grasshopper to say, don't you get it? Our whole way of life is based on this. They know that. They, you know, they figure out that there's millions of ants, and there's, like, what, 20 of us? They realize that they're just as, you know, good as us. There goes our whole way of life. There goes your party, buddy. Well, that's how I feel about marriage. You get these guys and women. They participate in these things. There's this inherent thing that says, oh, I reach a certain age, I need to be married, I need to have kids, I need all these things, I just need a guy then to love me, and blah, blah. And then the guy says, hey, I gotta have this chick around here, you know, getting old here, you know, gonna have kids, you know, keep the family name going on. You know? I'm not generalizing, you know, that every marriage is that way, but boy, sure run into it more often than not. Love is easy. Okay, you love everything. Love's all around. It really is. If you really, but do we wait for the more? And then you feel that you have true companionship. You know, you don't have to run around doing it because you know the person. You know, if you know that the guy likes to go out and, you know, it's like she doesn't know these things. I don't know. I say wait for the more. It'll hit you. It'll hit you like a semi truck. And then it all goes downhill from there, too. So there's no winning at all, but that's just what I think. You can tell me what you think by getting in touch with the program at radioaffliction.blogspot.com. In the comment sections, email me at radioaffliction@gmail.com. Or get in touch with it. Send an MP3. Record a question, encode it in MP3, and attach it to an email at radioaffliction@gmail.com. Or get on Skype. The code name is Radio Affliction. Or send me an email saying, hey, I want to talk to you, buddy. I've been married for 20 years, and I haven't had any problems. And I'll say, yeah, sure you have, buddy. But it's okay. Just say my interpretation of marriage is different. Not trying to push it off on anyone else, but I meet all these girls and guys that are like, geez. All right, when we come back then, special presentation of Peter and Peck Old Time Radio's version of The Shadow. Tell me what you think on that. Got a show this week and next week, or whenever I do them. They may not be weeks apart. This show and next show. And tell me what you think about it. See if that's something you'd like to see on the Radio Affliction more often. Maybe it doesn't have to be a drama like that. It could be like a soap opera or something. Your ideas on that. Because I need all the help I can get, folks. As you can tell. Take a quick break and you hit that. Get back to you here on the Radio Affliction.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
I'm just fine, Rick. Hey, can I ask you something personal?
Oh, I suppose. You know, what the heck.
Well, do you have hemorrhoids?
What makes you say that?
Well, nothing really, but it's just that your right hand seems to move to your backside quite often.
That's ridiculous. I'm perfectly fine. Oh,
Rick, I mean, if you have a problem, you should just come out with it.
All right. I have hemorrhoids, okay? And not little ones either. I mean, these are big flamers, and it's not just my hand either. I mean, I've worn all the furniture here in my house. I mean, we're talking major, major hemorrhoids here.
Rick, I know. But, you know, you can get helps for hemorrhoids.
Sure, but I can't afford surgery.
Rick, we're in the 90s now. There are lots of ways to treat hemorrhoids without surgery. And many of the medicines that are available now, you can get without a prescription.
Hey, that sounds pretty good.
It sure does, but you really should get the advice of your doctor for the best treatment.
Thanks, Pete. I feel better already.
This has been a public service announcement of the National Hemorrhoid Sufferer Society and the Association of People with Worn Furniture.
What evil lurks inside the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
Charlie, what are you doing here?
How you doing, Mr. Monroe?
I'm all right.
You know, I haven't seen you in a while. You know, we're old friends, right?
Right.
I mean, we go way back. We used to play in the same sandbox and, you know, rip off candy bars.
All right, Charlie, what is it? What do you want?
I need 10,000.
10,000? You're crazy. I'm not giving you 10,000.
Well, I mean, I found my way into a big game tomorrow. Minimum stakes of 500
bucks.
Yeah,
I've heard all this before.
I know you have. I know you have. But this time, you gotta believe me.
Yeah, what makes it so different this time?
This time, all right, I'll give you 20 points. 20% of what I want. How's that, huh?
There's only one way I'll give you that money, Charlie. I need something from you.
Well, what's that?
Something more than points.
What's that, Mr. Monroe?
I need your daughter.
You know my daughter's dead. Oh, teach him to talk about my daughter now. He's dead. Yes. $2,000. I got it.
So how would you like it if I rub your thighs?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
Excuse me.
Oh, Steve. Hi.
Lamont.
I'll talk to you later.
Sorry to interrupt there.
No. So, what's going on? Why did you invite me here?
Well, I need to talk to you about some
serious business, I assume.
Afraid so.
I knew you couldn't invite me here for pleasure.
No. We've had a murder.
Murder? What's going on? What happened?
It's a banker, Bill Monroe. He's running some gambling and some extortion, and we're not that unhappy to see him die, but the circumstances are pretty grim.
So, do you know who's responsible? You've got any leads?
We do. We've had an anonymous tip that someone named Charlie X is involved.
Charlie X. I've heard of that name before.
Yeah, he's been running around. Typical scum. He came out of the Bronx.
He's got several gambling debts. If you check your records, I think you'll find that out.
Okay, I'll look into it.
Okay, is he nearby?
Yes, he's very nearby here. Come with me right now.
Okay, off these stairs. Nice place. How long has it been here?
It's been here about 20 years now. We've had our eye on it. Usually it's just most of the penny-ante stuff, but yeah. I'm afraid they're getting into some more serious business these days.
I didn't think a place like this would get any involvement. This is mostly just for tourists.
Well, that's what we were hoping, but it's gone beyond that now.
Hmm. Is that him down there?
Yep, there he is, right there. Here, let me turn the speaker on and...
Okay.
They can't see us up here. We can hear them. They can't hear us or see us, so...
I can understand that.
He's right there, the dealer there, with the black hair and the little rabbit eyes.
Blackjack. Tight game. You can lose a lot of money on that.
Right. The murder was pretty grim, as I said. We had banker Bill Monroe shot in the back in his office there. He'd been... wallet had been taken, and other personal effects seemed to have been taken, but the office itself was left untouched.
So he just took what he wanted, huh? Money and...
I'm afraid so.
Take the money and run. Well, I think I should get some information on Mr. Charlie X.
I'd appreciate it.
I think I know how.
I think this is a job for the Shadow.
I'm sorry, Mr. Charlie, but you've lost. You owe us $300. We need the money, Betty Bad.
I'm sorry. I'll get you back. I can't pay you right now. Right?
No. You have told us before, but you know we need the money.
I've come through in the past. Don't give me a hassle about $300. Give me a couple of days.
Well,
all right?
It's we gotta have our money. You know, we gotta keep it in business.
Phone call for Mr. Charlie.
Phone call for me?
Yes. Well, you take it there, but I want my money. Okay.
All right, I'll get it to you. Just hang on. All right.
All right.
Hello? Hello, who's there? Who's that laughing?
This is the Shadow, Charlie.
The Shadow? Who the hell's the Shadow?
We've been watching you, Charlie. We want to ask you a couple of questions.
I don't feel like answering any questions.
Bill Monroe.
I don't know.
You know him, don't you, Charlie?
No, I don't know Bill Monroe. I've never heard of Bill Monroe. Who is he?
You should never lie to the Shadow, Charlie.
I'm not lying.
Mm-hmm. You've known him a long time, haven't you? You were good friends in the bank business, weren't you?
No. Don't know him at all. I don't know who you're talking about.
Don't worry, Charlie. If you don't tell me, you'll tell us sometime. Because we're watching you, Charlie.
Charlie, come back to the game.
What? Yeah, I'll be right there, guys. I gotta get out of here. The Shadow's after me. I gotta get out of here, guys. I can't play
just
in the game anymore.
Where do you think you're going?
Cranston!
That's right. Boy, we've been on your trail for a long time now. Too bad we don't have any hardcore evidence, but I don't need that. I've got a gun.
That's too bad, Cranston. I've got a machine gun. Trying to get out of that.
You missed.
Oh, no.
Yes. This is it for you, pal.
I gotta get out of here.
Yes. No way. I'll get to you later, honey, all right? All right. This is it for you.
You won't catch me, Cranston. You won't catch me, you evil, rotten, dirty...
That's the end of you. And the end of all crime! Yes, the Shadow wins again.
Hey, Lamont, you got him.
Yes, I know. Just another day for Lamont Cranston and the Shadow.
Thank God we had you on this case.
Just to prove that crime does not pay. And I know all the evil that lurks inside the hearts of men. That's right, the Shadow knows.
You've been listening to Peter and Peck, Old Time Radio, written by Peter Clay, produced by Darren Peck and Peter Clay, engineered by Peter Clay and Darren Peck, created by Darren Peck and Peter Clay, additional voices by Steve Zavatero. Tune in next week for another episode of Peter and Peck, Old Time Radio.
You've been listening to the Radio Affliction. This is Peter Clay thanking you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, please do so by getting in touch with us at our blog site at radioaffliction.blogspot.com. Or you can send an email to radioaffliction@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you. We'll see you next time on the Radio Affliction.